Good morning. I want to start by saying how grateful I am to be a part of this community. So many of you have, in big or small ways, been a significant part of my life and my journey. You have asked thoughtful questions and held space for me. And so I'm really grateful both to be part of the Assembly community, and I'm really grateful to have friends and family members here as well, because you've all been a part of my story. So when I was asked a few weeks ago if I would be willing to share this summer, and then I found out that the theme of the summer was transition and transformation, I thought, yeah, I've done some of that lately. The last couple of years have been really big for me. And so at surface level, I thought, okay, do I want to share about a couple of years ago when I was coming out and getting divorced? Or do I want to talk about the biggest transition that I'm currently in, which is that I've resigned from my position at Goshen High School, and I don't have another position lined up? But as I thought about those external shifts, I realized that there was an internal shift that I wanted to share with you all, an internal transition. For a long time in my life, on some level, I kind of knew what to expect next. I went to high school. I graduated from high school. After high school, I went to college. And I reflected on these things, but it was just kind of the next step. I went to college, found something that hopefully would be somewhat meaningful, a degree in sociology with a minor in music. really interesting, straight shot into nothing or everything. But so went to college, like many people do after that, moved, found a job, and I got married within a year after college. Newlyweds, it's the time to explore the world, right? So we went and spent a year in South Korea and enjoyed ourselves. And it wasn't until the next step of my life, which I thought, okay, high school, college, marriage, adventure, kids? It wasn't until that point, and we were starting to have conversations. Is this something we want? What would our lives look like? How would that change if we had kids in our lives? Knowing full well that if we decided we wanted kids, that wasn't the same thing as having kids. And so what really invited me to look at the world differently and not just go step by step was a couple of miscarriages that I had. I had miscarriages two consecutive Marches. And so it was the second March. It was March 2017. And I had just found out that my baby didn't have a heartbeat anymore. And we were about ready to open the show. I've worked at the high school. I've played piano for the choirs and in the pit for the musical. And we were about ready to open Camelot, two weekends of Camelot. And so I did the show. That's my, that's been my life and that's been my love. And got through the show. The miscarriage happened and spring break was there. And I knew that I needed to sit with this and process this. And so I created space in my spring break. And by that point in my life, I knew that I'm an external processor. And what that means to me is that I learn things when I say them out loud or if I journal them. But that's kind of constricting at times, because if I say something out loud and I haven't figured it out yet, like maybe I won't be completely honest in that moment. Or if I journal, then it's written down and who knows who will read it. So I tried something new. I decided I would journal, then I've processed it, and then I would shred it. Who knows? Maybe this would work. And so I tried it, and I started to explore parts of myself that I hadn't looked at, parts of myself that were unknown, things that I maybe wouldn't have felt comfortable looking at. And that was the start for me of, oh, what happens if I lean into these spots that are really unknown? And so since then, I have had a number of, I don't know, I'm experimenting, I'm trying things, and leaning into the awkward and the unknown. So what happens, what if I journal and I shred? What if I go to a front porch breakfast with some people that I had barely met? What if I go on a trip to Arizona by myself and meet a relative, some relatives that I had never met before, or go on a hike by myself, or meet up with someone doing a creative project in Phoenix who I had randomly met at a Goshen artists meetup? What if I want to go out to eat and I don't have anyone to go with? What if I show up at Goshen Brewing Company by myself? Maybe I run into people I know. Maybe I eat by myself. Maybe I turn around and decide, that's all right. What if I resign from the job that as a high schooler I thought was my dream job and was the last thing I could vision out for myself without the next position lined up? What if I dare to try and share my story in 8 minutes or less on a Sunday morning? So this is where I find myself, living into these questions, leaning into the awkward and the unknown. And that's part of what I love about this. So for all that has been, thanks. I love that because I have gotten where I am because I've been where I've been. I don't have regrets about that, and I know things because I've experienced the things that I've experienced, and I feel like that represents that. The second part, for all that will be yes, is this lovely openness, right? That what comes, I invite. It's that the poem that we started with, the guest house. But where we actually live is right in between. The only moment that I ever have is this one. And so there's something lovely about having that posture. What will I lean into? What will I try? What will you lean into? What will you try? What will we lean into? What will we try? And so I want to leave you with some words from the poet Rilke. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer.
To the reason. And to your knees, you're closer to the reason. And there's no making cases, getting up, trading places. And there's no
The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
I wondered what it would feel like to be up here, looking out. There are many, many kinds of transitions, from the much anticipated transitions of graduation and leaving home and having a new baby, to the unwelcome ones that are thrust upon us, death, debilitation, losing a job. My story today is about the transitions that come with moving. Mundane, yes, but at least in my life, moving is the transition that I have repeated the most often. Maybe the same is true for you. Maybe you're getting ready to move right now, or maybe you just moved. Moving, like many transitions, is a change that we feel in our bodies in a particular time, in a particular space. My first year of college, my parents called to tell me that they were selling the farm and moving to the nearby town of Napanee. I paused, troubled, and said, "Just be sure to pick a house that's on a street running east and west so I won't be disoriented." They didn't. I'm sure it wasn't so much about the way the street ran, though our bodies certainly feel those kinds of changes. It was more about leaving a house that held the memories of my childhood, the memories of my only sister who had died in an accident 5 years earlier. How would I remember Barbara now? The memories of those foster babies and toddlers that I had loved. Yes, they'd come and gone, as foster children do. But somehow, those memories were stored in our farmstead. So then, in the 40 years of marriage, I've moved too. Merv and I have moved houses and or communities 13 times. Nearly 30 years ago, we built a house on 8 acres of land south of New Paris. We were going to live there the rest of our lives. We would grow apple trees, in fact, planted some. We were going to raise our 3 kids in the Fairfield School District and grow old there. Instead, within 2 years, we left that newly built house in Amish country. We spent 2 years in Puerto Rico teaching at Academia Menonita Betania. We then moved to Scottsdale, Pennsylvania for me to be an editor at Mennonite Publishing House. And after 8 years in Pennsylvania and the publishing house meltdown, we went to Kenya with Mennonite Central Committee for 3 years. And then we moved back to northern Indiana. Now, the last 13 years have been very stable. only two moves and those within Goshen. I don't need to tell you that moving to new cultures and communities is even harder than moving houses, which is hard enough. Moving houses is stressful for our bodies, and our bodies are disoriented and our things are hard to find. Moving to a new community means starting over with friendships, starting over with connections, finding the grocery store. Moving to a new culture, whoa, it brings a deluge of smells and sounds and sights. Ever since living in Costa Rica as a young adult, I have thought that there ought to be a name for that emotion that comes with that total newness, something like strangeness. There are names like fear and delight and hate and love for other emotions. Why not strangeness? That strangeness emotion puts you on high alert. Your body tries to notice everything. You feel both exhilarated and overwhelmed. The new language or languages are surrounding you means you can't even function normally. And as you get to know people in a new culture, your world expands. And you feel like it's just kind of pulling you, changing you. You see whole new ways of doing things, whole new ways of thinking. You hear the stories of the people you grow to love. In Kenya, I saw up close how poverty affected children, and that too affected me deeply. Did I grow in compassion? I hope so. Did I question easy answers about God's care? For sure. Each experience in our lives shapes us. Each story we hear becomes a part of our own. So even if you return, as we kind of did, to where you lived before, you're a different person. Whenever I've lived in another culture, I've needed to make major shifts in my worldview and theology. And so all of these traditions, especially I think the tradition of moving back, has taken patience and courage. Patience. I've heard numbers like 3 years to adjust to a new community and 7 years to adjust when transitioning back from an international experience. Those can feel like very long times when you're not quite belonging and not quite fitting in. And I've found it takes courage to face the loss of place and friendships, and perhaps facing troubling things that happened. There is our memory of people, people who love us, people and experiences that positively and negatively affected us, and the transformative work of transition and transformation means holding all of those stories. Reflection becomes a sacred task. Long walks help. Friends help. In the Good Shepherd story, as told in Children in Worship, it combines John 10 and Psalm 23. And I love how it's told with the flannel pieces. One sheep gets lost behind a rock, and the good shepherd goes back and finds it and brings it home to the shelter of the sheepfold. Knowing that I will be found and brought home at some time has been a powerful message for me in times of transition. On the other hand, and maybe quite opposite, the vastness of the universe is also comforting in times of transition. I found it oddly comforting to know that the sun rises and sets just as it always has. And there's something deeply grounding about knowing that you're just one small piece in the universe, maybe even unimportant. Many years ago, I wrote an article for Christian Living magazine entitled Still the Same Stars When God Calls You to a New Place. One part of that article described how, as a family, we watched the August meteor showers in Indiana, and then in Puerto Rico, and then again in Pennsylvania. At the time, those were our most recent moves. No matter where we lived, it helped to know that the sky was still the same. In that article, I also quoted Veronica Chambers, an Afro-Latina writer and editor. Here's Chambers. Surviving a loss and letting go is only half the story. The other half is the secret belief that we will find in one form or another what we have lost. It is that potential, shimmery and as impossibly distant as a star on a clear night, that helps us to survive. Our family returned from Kenya 13 years ago, Merv and Elena and I. We found a spiritual home in a small congregation with life-giving, open-hearted theology. It was assembly. The worshiping body easily fit in what we now call that multi-purpose space, and that was without using the baby cave. It was easy to learn the names of the 15 or 20 kids. An assembly has grown in size and has led to many transitions. It's grown in size because I think many of you share our family's experience. You moved, physically or theologically. You looked for a progressive, thoughtful, compassionate community of faith, and you found assembly. So as a congregation, we've moved into this new space, and the transitions will continue. As more people come to join us, and I predict there will be more people. I so much want us to remember that the new people who are coming are quite often in a time of transition, with a need to be known by name, and a need to find a theological and spiritual home, and we can be a part of that. May this new space and the many stories yet to be told here, may they shape us into a people who more than ever welcome others, who more than ever make space and listen for the still small voice of God's Spirit, who more than ever help each other through transitions and losses and gains, who more than ever seek to be God's people in this particular time and space.